the mark of a true man, a wholehearted man, a warrior, is that he can treat his own heart with compassion. Friends, welcome back to another episode of the Become Good Soil podcast. I'm Morgan, and we are midstream in a deep conversation with my brother, like-hearted ally, Pablo Cerrone of Wild Sons. It's been said pretty regularly that we live in a culture that's overfed and undernourished. And I think those are very important words to consider as we step into this part three, overfed and undernourished. I've shared before in past Become Good Soil podcasts that our world is drowning in content, and yet we find ourselves starving for connection. With that idea in mind, I want to invite you to join me to slow down, to pause, and to linger. We were midstream in a conversation last time over this idea of compassion, exploring the question of what if offering compassion towards our own hearts is a true mark of a wholehearted man and a warrior? What if it is one of the primary practices being made available to us to become the kind of king that can serve with the heart of a king, but can lead with the heart of a servant, the kind of king that operates out of overflow, and the kind of king that can wield his strength on behalf of others? And so my question to you as we step into part three is, what would it take to receive compassion for yourself to the measure that God is offering compassion to you as his son? Let's dive back in to part three of this conversation with Pablo. If you haven't listened to part one and part two, I would encourage you to start there. But for today, let's dive in to part three of Field Notes with Pablo. The mark of a true man, a wholehearted man, a warrior, is that he can treat his own heart with compassion. And it's from the words of Paul where he says, clothe yourself with compassion.
Yes.
Have compassion. And I was sitting there and I was deeply moved and convicted, where I realized, if I'm honest, I treat myself with very little compassion. I am slow to offer compassion to my own heart. And as we know, the way we treat our own hearts is inevitably how we treat others. We may say different things with our words, but from our essence, we only offer what we've received. And I drove out of last night, and I'm reflecting on it as you're sharing, that it takes a impossible courage, in other words, a supernatural courage, to say, would I receive compassion for myself to the measure that God is offering compassion towards me? And it's easier to be hard on myself.
Yes.
But I think that if we can appreciate that an on-ramp to receiving feminine love, an on-ramp to restoring this intimacy of God as Father and God as Mother, is simply the practice of compassion towards our own heart.
Yeah, and from there, my question to Jesus is, what does that look like? How can I make that a reality in the everyday? Where in my life am I not offering compassion to my own heart, that you're inviting me into that? How can I learn to receive your compassion and offer compassion to my own soul?
It's remarkable how, for me, So often the invitation is not in the big things, but it is in the very small acts of everyday life. Part of this theme for me. So an example, I was just doing a lot for the family and for mission. And I came home to the house and there was a moment that no one was home. It was the first chilly autumn day in Colorado. And I love fire and I have a lot of firewood. I love blocking and splitting firewood. It's one of my spiritual practices, the liturgy for me. And I've got probably 5-6 cords of firewood now stocked up. I try to heat my house as much as I can with a wood burning stove. And it was a little too warm for a fire. And what I felt was get busy, like clean the kitchen to help my wife because she's on mission for Captivating and it would just love her. Get some things done, organize the garage. Like I have 20 minutes, don't waste it. Mm. And as an act that I would name as compassion, I made a fire. I poured a, single finger of whiskey and I just sat without a phone, without technology. And I let that fire just comfort me.
Yes.
I let it heal me. I let it warm me. I opened all the windows so that all the heat could dissipate because it was too hot for a fire. But I just needed to let God love me.
Yes.
Which is hard to say, but I know that that's true. And so I just want to reflect that back as we're talking about this because it's obscure. It's like a snow leopard.
Yes.
But we have to name practical things. And so you're naming to stay in a tent when it's raining and quote unquote miss the hunt, right? Efficiency says don't waste it. The elk are out there in the rain, but to wrap up in a down sleeping bag and just be comforted. There's a reset. There's a restorative work where I can actually open my hands. And what I feel in the spiritual realm is the things that I'm holding so tightly to, I didn't even know till I start opening my hands. And then as I release them, I have to increase my trust and confidence in God that he's got me without me holding those. And then I see other things filling my hands. And so as an example, the kids pour into the house, my teenagers, my wife, and there's something in me that's excited to receive them and engage them playfully rather than just serve them out of some duty, but all the while know I'm hurting and I'm tired and my body language is saying you're an interruption.
Yes. Yeah, in my story, and first I didn't know that what I was looking for was mothering, and you've heard me talk about this, the showers, the long
yes.
showers.
Yes.
They're a rescue. And it's a almost comical phrase that when Juanita sees me, right, I'm tied up in knots and she says, why don't you go take a shower? And what she means is what you're smelling. It is you need space to receive the, and now we're naming it compassion. That's a big portion of that. So the practice started many, many years ago for me because the shower was the only place where I was not interrupted. I couldn't bring my phone with me in or my laptop. People, I could lock the bathroom door and that was expected. That was not weird. I'm not escaping anything.
Yes.
I would turn the lights off and crank up worship and just let the water run and let the water wash over me and maybe crawl at the bottom in the tub, like just crawl and receive the water over me and let God wash over me and remove from me all the crap that I'm carrying. And with the worship cranking, I can speak and pray without that being audibly annoying for the people outside, without interrupting my privacy and my time alone with God. And so I can speak to him, I can cry, I can express my anger when there is anger. And most times, it starts with something like that. It starts with me venting the frustrations or the throwing a fist, and little by little begins to transition to that process of releasing and letting things go and receiving the love and the tenderness that God has for me. And he takes me places, right? In that place of darkness, where I cannot even see my hands, my own body. He shows me things and he speaks to me and he counsels me. But only recently have I seen, with your counsel, as you have brought the category of mothering into the forefront of my masculine journey, that is a place where I am as close to back in the womb. I am back inside in the place that where nothing can hurt me. The problems of the world cannot touch me in there. There is no male in here. There is no disruption or distraction. So that's another way, I guess, that I have in the past received that loving portion, that tenderness and mercy and compassion from God without having the words to see that that's what was happening.
Yes.
And now with more practice, I have eyes to see, oh, you have been mothering me. I just didn't have eyes to see it.
Yes.
Now that the sun is ready, can mom appear? Can I see how you have been mothering me? And would you give me eyes to see how you want to mother me moving forward?
Yeah, and in contrast, what I notice in my own heart is the reach to be mothered, though I wouldn't have named that, through things like alcohol, sugar, carbs. And they might sound really simple, but they're actually reaches of, I need to feel good, right? Chuck Bolton says, a medicator is a reach to change how we feel, like for good or for ill. What a medicator does as a category is a reach to change how we feel. And so, yeah, what we're naming, it's just, these are deep waters, but we've explored this before. The Become Good Soil podcast, I did one called Blurring the Lines of Vocation and Family, and it was number 88. It's a great resource where I actually asked guys that question. That's where the long showers surfaced, of asking guys, where do you receive comfort in a healthy way? And where do you receive comfort in an unhealthy way? It was like 150 men from around the world. It was awesome to hear the response. Then also in the Sam Jolman Soulcraft podcast, Sam is a brilliant counselor. And I just went after his heart to say, help all of us men understand what brings a man to your office. Where is his pain and what is his redemptive path? And he said, across the board, one of the things every man needs is appropriate ways to receive healthy comfort, to restore this place of mother. So yeah, those are great resources for guys to dive deeper. I'd love to turn a corner and maybe take a pass at one other question if you're up for that.
Go for it.
In this conversation, there's a lot coming up regarding family and that context. In the spirit of disclosure and just inviting friends into kind of the field notes behind the scenes, I'm curious, on that front of marriage, give us some insight, challenges, victories. What is God revealing? What's God inviting you into? What's worth celebrating? Take us into the frontier of marriage.
Yeah, marriage. Everything is great. It's always been great.
Next question. Oh, man. Pinocchio, you just hit the screen with your nose.
Yeah. Marriage. Yeah. Right now, so recently, there have been a couple of things. One, on the note of victories, to start on the where the joy is found, we just celebrated 20 years of marriage with Juanita. And as you well know, our story is a story of at the beginning of our marriage, a story of both myself and Juanita bringing our brokenness and hurting each other very deeply to the point that we were getting divorced. It was inevitable. And I wrecked our marriage, and it was really messy. And it was in the context of that crisis that God, in his wisdom and in his providence, sent a beautiful man to bring the Wild at Heart message to me, which brought restoration to my own soul. And in turn, I was able to offer my strength on her behalf. And that was the beginning of the restoration of our marriage. We were in Florida as a married couple for the first 12 years of marriage. Then we moved to the Bay Area. And for the last five, we have been here in Colorado. And in this past summer, Jesus invited us to go back to Miami, Florida, to recount our story and to go back and retrace our steps. And we didn't imagine it was going to be that hard. We went to all the places where all of these situations took place, where all the heartache, all the brokenness, all the pain, and we cried again, and we remembered, and then we went through the journey of restoration and transformation as well, and Jesus brought us to where we are today in this trip down memory lane. And so, coming on the heels of all of this journey, we had the opportunity to get married again as part of our celebration, our 20 years of marriage. And so I had proposed to her back in May or June, not to simply renew our vows, but to get married again, which is different. Because there are an incredible amount of stories as to why we wanted a new wedding again. But in part of the joke is that I do expect my new wife to like me better than my first wife.
You're so much more likable now. I think it will be easier.
I think it's the bald head and the
definitely
that is irresistible. So all of that to say a couple of things in marriage. One, remembering, and it's a spiritual, one of the big spiritual practices that Jesus is inviting me into and inviting Juanita into. So we're actually doing this together, purposefully sitting down and creating a space where we can remember and remember both the good and the bad. And as we remember, what has surfaced is who Jesus is, who God the Father is, who the Holy Spirit is, and the relentless pursuit of our hearts. And so it's grown our appreciation for who we are, each other. I have come to know my wife again through this journey of remembering this year. And I have not only come to love her deeply, more deeply than before, but I have fallen in love with her again, which is mind-blowing. It's beautiful. And I can say that she's experienced, or she's expressed that she's experiencing something very similar as well. And we have come to love God more deeply and to fall in love with him again. Because we are used to, I am in crisis mode. I cry out to God and he comes and rescues me, and we worship and we celebrate it of his goodness. And that's beautiful. And that will continue to be part of the story. But to stop and look back and say, you are crazy, God. You're mad. You're bananas. How did you write this story in this way? How did you craft this journey of restoration and transformation with these circumstances and this turn of events? And crazy is, I would never have in my wildest dreams scripted a story like the one that I'm a part of. Like, each of us is a part of it. We have eyes to see our story. And so part of what we're doing recently, very practically with Juanita, by way of a spiritual discipline, is sitting down and going through our photos in our phones and comparing notes and going back to those old pictures and saying, oh my God, you look way better. And look, where's your hair? And cracking up around those things. But also remember the pain. Remember the day that I told you this. Remember how much we cried together. And look at what Jesus has done. Look at where we are today. And part of what Jesus is telling me and telling us about that is he is using memory as the fuel to strengthen our faith so that we can embrace the battles that are ahead, knowing the God that will deliver us in the same way that he delivered us in the past. If we consent to the journey, if we keep saying yes to him, if we keep pushing together as one with him and with each other. And so that is one of the big aspects of frontier in marriage. The other one is God's invitation to live, experience life as one, not just as good husband and wife, good partners, good friends, but as one, as an individual, a single organism, becoming one more spiritually, emotionally, physically, obviously, in the act of making love. But for that has meant for me to die to my way of doing things, especially making things happen. Efficiency, productivity. Juanita's war was around her voice. The story of her life was the story of the enemy trying to assault her so that she would never speak her mind, that she wouldn't express her opinions. share her desires. And the story of my life has been the story of feeling that everything is up to me, that I'm on my own, and therefore I just need to charge and make things happen. When those two broken people get together, I run over her very quickly and very easily. Yes. And so in that journey of becoming one, God's invitation to me, more than an invitation, command, has been shut up. Let her speak. Give her the time she needs. And I can talk, and I can move, and I can run. And what he's saying is, you stay still. And when a question is, when someone asks you guys a question, you turn to her and look at her and let her unpack everything it is that is in her heart. As he is asking her to risk in letting her voice be heard, for me, risking is to not come up with the answer and let her speak. And sometimes that's longer. And sometimes the words are coming out of my mouth, or the things that I know we need to do are like, I need to move. I need to get things done. I need to whatever that is. And what Jesus is saying is, let her take the lead. And so it feels like death. But as I have consented to that death, I have seen her glory shine brighter. I'm seeing her glory shine brighter. I'm seeing her blossom in a way that I had never seen before. And her voice is rescuing me. And because she's the one, when I allow her to take the stage and to be the one initiating conversation, responding for us as a married couple, I realized after that I would have blown it, that would have done things my way instead of God's way. And her way of doing things is my Ezer connecting. It is her rescuing me, my lifesaver. And for most of the last 20 years, I have committed suicide 1,000 times, if you will, because I have not created a space for her to come and bring her glory and therefore rescue us and do things her way. So that is new as of the last year and a half or two, maybe, of practicing this discipline. And I blow it more than I don't steal. And I see my brokenness being on the way more times than not. And so that's frontier in marriage. And it's coming from the increased desire to experience the oneness that Jesus is allowing us to see is possible. Following the prayer of your beautiful wife when she says that she prays that you guys may experience the fullness of what's available between a man and a woman on this side of heaven. That has become our mantra for Juanita and I. Wait, what? There is way more that is available on this side of heaven between a man and a woman, between her and me. I want to go for that. And for me, in this season, it looks like shutting up and letting her.
And so what does it look like? I'm listening to your story, and where my soul goes is I want oneness. I want the full portion. I want everything God has available for a man and a woman under heaven. And so what's in the way? What's next? What's for now? What's for later? Right? These questions surface. And Pablo, I think too, as I'm listening, one of the layers that I see in this beautiful kind of montage is celebration. Mm-hmm. Because when we have this mindset of going after the more, we can get weary. Yeah. Because that can always feel like not good enough.
Yes.
Right? But what I hear is this beautiful dance between going after the more, but sitting on the couch with your phones and looking back and celebrating.
Yeah.
Look what God's done. I could have never wrote this story. I would have never wrote this story. And here we are, more in love, getting remarried after 20 years. And that act, that practice of celebration is enormous, especially for her heart to feel safe, to feel seen, to feel delighted in. And for us to remember, like, it's worth it. It's worth it.
And for the kids, I love that you use the word celebration. I wanted to express that. I don't think that I use that same word. And that is what the remembrance brings into, is celebration. That was the theme of the second marriage. And in light with that, we bought a disco ball. And so we have a disco ball. Now and then now we hang from the living room in our house and we just shine, put a flashlight to shine into the disco ball, crank up music, and the kids begin to dance and we dance. Making a purposeful act of celebrating. And the questions are, what are we celebrating tonight? What has God done that we're celebrating tonight? And we let the kids say that we went to the nature lab and I held this boa. Awesome. What are you celebrating, Lucas? That I found a salamander in the window well and I have it in my room now. Awesome. Let's celebrate. Celebration.
It is. I love it. What are you celebrating? There's always a cause for celebration. That's what Paul said when he goes, you think I should be different than I am? I'm actually overflowing with joy. And I know you think I shouldn't be, but you don't know that I have a secret within me. I have cause for celebration.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Just in shared disclosure. Pablo, we're in this together, you know, in this oneness. We too are at 20 years. It too was a celebration, but also a pause to say, wow, we're carrying a lot of baggage that's unnecessary from ways that we've hurt each other over the years. And we've forgiven, but we haven't let go. And I will confess, I've had this secret envy of people that get a second marriage. Because they're all around us. We have all kinds of friends and foes and others that get a second chance. And I think, what would it be like to have a more mature version of me be able to pursue a more mature version of another woman? And you get to cut your losses with your baggage and your damage. And you go, you know, there's a movie, This Is 40. Right? Yeah. Is that the movie?
Yeah,
there's the movie, This Is 40. And these overweight, mid-40 guys sitting around in their bike clothes at a coffee shop. You know, they're supposed to go on a long ride. They end up doing 10 miles and eating croissants and cappuccinos. And they're sitting around. And one guy ends up, he goes, God, I can't wait to meet my second wife. And we always joke around. We joke around of them meeting their second husbands, right? And Jesus called my bluff, very similar to you. He said, you can get remarried. You can have a second marriage just to the same woman. And it was this permission to say, wait, this comes in pints? You know, I felt like the hobbits going, wait, you can do that? It's the kingdom. He's playful. He's interesting, fascinating, creative. Well, we started approaching our wedding vows and we realized, are we ready to get married? Hmm. And we're a lot more sober-minded 20 years later because we know the cost. And we both had this hesitation, not out of love for each other, but out of our own shame or our own feeling of insufficiency of, are we willing to say yes, knowing what we know now, marriage requires of me.
Yes.
I mean, it really is fundamentally, do I have what it takes? And so it sent us, Sherry and I, in this year of real sober exploration about where are we? And it's interesting you use the word oneness, which you and I talk a lot about, but state of my marriage, we actually use the mark to celebrate our 20 year by getting a marriage intensive. And we actually signed up for two marriage intensives. They're coming up. We're spending a week with Bill and Lori Loki, and that's happening in a couple weeks. And we are going to do a marriage intensive with Gary Unruh. These are both heroes, legends of mine that I've featured on Become Good Soil podcasts. And they're available and it ain't cheap. But it's 10 cents on the dollar for divorce and consequences. I can tell you that from the men I walk with. But we're going after it. So we signed up for these intensives. And I'm excited because we know the fruit. Yes. We've just been through enough to say it's totally worth it. It's the best investment I can make. I was filling out the form, kind of an intake of describe your marriage. And so I had to sit down and think about Sherry and I and say, where are we? Holy Spirit, give me a picture of our marriage today. It was interesting. The image that came to me was the New England Patriots. Now, I'll be honest, I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan at best, but not a huge football fan. Yeah. I mean, Pittsburgh runs in my blood, and my son is TCA Titan, and so that's where my loyalty is. But I'm not much into football. So I'm like, New England Patriots? Go on, God, go on. And he says, okay, they had this dynasty for years, right? Led by Tom Brady, and they were a championship team. They had a winning defense, and they had a winning offense. And I felt like the father was highlighting, that's how you act. Sherry is a winning offense. You're a winning defense. Or at other times, she's the winning defense. You're the winning offense. And you guys pull off the unthinkable. You're kind of a dream team. But offense and defense are kind of two different teams under the same umbrella. And that's different than union. That's different than oneness. You know, I was reflecting on C.S. Lewis in Mere Christianity, where he describes Christian marriage as a violin and a bow, or a lock and a key. And he says, are they two or are they one? And what's fascinating in the nuance of it is they are distinct, different things, but together they make one thing. They're both two in one, and a violin only functions as it's intended to be, as an instrument and the bow, or a lock and the key. And what strikes me, Pablo, after 20 years is we've gotten really good at operating in certain ways, but the frontier is there is a greater portion of union in this, I'll name it a person, that God intended to bring to the world that is neither Morgan nor Sherry, but is us as a new entity, a new person, a new being that's underdeveloped, that's underinvested in, that's immature, and that is closer to the restoration of the kingdom because God sets the lonely in family. It actually is a greater expression of God on earth for Sherry and I in our union to come forth than Sherry or I individually. And so it feels really new because it requires a death to what I have dreamed about without my wife in mind. There are just certain dreams that I've formed in my mind, thinking that like my best life, the best version of me would be God's intentions. But actually in marriage, I laid down the death of that person. I'm going after something that God says is much, much greater, but has yet to fully be discovered. So I would say for my victory is we've signed up for these intensives. We're investing the money, the time, and we're all in. Like I feel the anticipation, because I know that's what it takes to recover your joy, to get your smile back, and to show the world like what's available that we have yet come to believe.
I love what I'm hearing you say, Morgan, and it sets the tone for me under the umbrella of look at what's available. And what I have seen you, and I have seen Sherry, and I have seen your marriage. What you guys have become over 20 years, it's a glorious marriage. And because of the 1,000 choices that you and her together have made, from the overflow of what your marriage is, we are all being fed in great ways in the kingdom currency. And yet your decision is, let's keep excavating, because we want our marriage to become better soil still, because we want to experience that supernatural fruit 30, 60, and 100 times, even more than what we have experienced. It is the invitation to not settle for the good, but celebrate the good and keep going for the best. And thank you for modeling that, because I want that. And sometimes it may be a disco ball and partying and celebrating with our pictures. And sometimes it may be to sit down at the counselor's office and go through the things that are current, that are still happening, that I would rather not go through, because I would rather pour another drink and party with my wife and with my kids. But that is equally, if not more, necessary. So thank you for sharing that. That inspires me to go back and keep fighting for the more.
There's a passage in 1 Corinthians 13 where Paul invites us to consider what love looks like. It's invoked in many weddings, and you've heard it before, but the best teaching I've heard on this is from Dallas Willard, where he says, we have to begin this passage with the verse that God is love. That if the mission is love, and we talk about love never gives up, love never fails, it can be this kind of false heroism or a high bar that we always come short. But Pablo, as we're talking today, I'm reminded that God is love. Mm. That what we're talking about is God manifests himself in the everyday fabric of our lives. That God is the author of family. Mm. He's the place of home. He is the joy in the disco ball. He's the courage in a counselor's office. He's the author of weather and animals and intimacy and friendship and family and vocation. That God is love. And in the beckoning in this passage in Corinthians is that it's more than possible, because it's opening our hearts to receive love. Paul says, love never gives up. That is to say, God never gives up. And so in this passage, we can just simply replace the word love with God and just let it be an anthem for what we're unpacking today. I feel really led to just simply speak this and pray this over our friends, that God never gives up, that God cares for others more than self, that God is always looking for the best. He never looks back, but he keeps going to the end. That God is a safe place and a shelter. God always trusts, God always hopes, and God always perseveres. God never fails.
Brothers, it is true, God never fails. The one who knows us best is the one who loves us most. As we partner with this wild-hearted God, as we dare to show compassion to our own heart in the same measure and with the same generosity that God does, we grow steadily over time in our connection with God. As this episode comes to a close, what I want to invite you to consider is that compassion is the seedbed for connection. And connection matures into love. And love, as Paul teaches us, never fails. I want to invite you to pause and to linger as this part three of a conversation comes to a close, to notice what surfaces in you. Where do you need to recover a soul's pace and a soul's portion? Where particularly is the Father inviting you to let his love penetrate, to let his love shine light? It's our honor and it's our privilege to walk with you as you steward the kingdoms entrusted to your care. Your apprenticeship in the kingdom of God is at the center of our heart. It's the heartbeat of everything we offer at Become Good Soil. And so thank you for joining me and joining Pablo in this conversation. It's a privilege to walk with you. We look forward to being together again on another episode of Become Good Soil podcast. And now let's take 90 seconds. Let's recover our breath. Let's turn into the present moment. Let's notice the heart of God and tune in to his heart for you.